Hello and welcome to the Gentleman's Journal podcast, a fortnightly discussion all about success, modern business and the lives of entrepreneurs. I'm Joe Bullmore, I'll be your host for the day, and I'm joined this afternoon once again in the games room upstairs at Mark's Club by Aaron Simpson, the founder and chairman of the world's most famous luxury concierge company, Quintessentially. Founded with university friends Ben Elliott and Paul Drummond in the late 90s, Quintessentially offers its clients staggering access to anything and everything. They'll put on a private party at the Pyramids one week, make you a working Batmobile the next, get you a cheeseburger in the Amazon rainforest the morning after, and even get your kids into the best schools in the world before the day is out. The company now has over 3,500 employees, offices in 60 cities around the globe, and big, big plans. Today, Aaron tells us about his project to build the world's biggest superyacht, the changing spending habits of the ultra-high net worth, and his secret plans to create the world's most ambitious immersive experience. Aaron, I'd like to start by asking the question that you're probably asked more than any other, the boring but juiciest question. What is the most outrageous thing you've ever been asked to fix for a client?
Fix.
Or sort out. I mean, I don't want to jump straight into the fix word.
When you say outrageous, do you mean most extravagant or do you mean bizarre and weird?
Whichever one makes the best story for this podcast. Bizarre and weird, probably. That
podcast.
Sounds fun.
Oh, okay. This is news to me. No. We get very odd requests all the time. So our Batcave one. We have a client who lives not far from here in Kensington, and he's a massive fan of Batman. And so we got a special Batmobile built for him. Which was all custom made. It's about £3.5 million worth of Batmobile.
Wow.
Which is not far off the cost of the actual Batmobile. Might as well just bought it second hand. But he wanted to go one stage further, so we dug up his entire back garden and sure. his cellar and turned it into the Batcave. But wow. he wanted the original TV version of Batman and Robin.
The kind of 1970s slightly
sort of
camp
cave.
One.
Yeah, right. This very shiny sort of fluorescent colours.
Yeah.
But was very deeply disappointed when the films came out and transformed it into a fluorescent sort of single story.
Wow.
So we had to rip it all out and replace it all. And then I think they're coming out with another one. So he's, you know, but anyway, at each turn we have done the job. So that's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
I was taking collecting and memorabilia to a whole new
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely.
But then we get daft ones. Like, you know, we have a client who's trading, say, in New York, and he's talking to his fellow contemporary in Dubai, and they're competing over some sort of commodities trade. And the guy goes, yeah, but I bet you can't get me an In-N-Out burger or something. And we get him an In-N-Out burger.
You know, flown over from...
No. We tend to get someone to make it and
right. It's not going to travel well.
Yeah,
is it?
It's not going to really get there in time. But it got there in like an hour or so.
Really?
Yeah, we get it there in an hour. Yeah.
So take us through the bare bones of that process.
Oh,
someone calls
know.
You up.
I don't know.
And you don't ever have to deal with that.
Well, I tried to do this.
Yeah.
That's why I have such admiration for our lifestyle managers because
sure.
they really do answer the phone and you can ask us for anything, anytime, anywhere. So you know, ultimately. They answer the phone and it can be yes
yeah.
I would like 3 giraffes for a kiddies party but there have to be fluorescent pink spots on them
yeah
and off you go
wow so anything is possible with your lifestyle manager do you think
legal or moral yeah
yeah absolutely so if I give you a scenario I mean we don't want to work in hypotheticals but something like Wimbledon coming up
mm-hmm.
and I'm a very rich Frenchman say and I want a seat in the royal box mm-hmm. for the semi-final Nadal, Federer will say. It's packed out. Could you do that?
It depends on a number of factors.
Yeah.
We wouldn't promise you to get roll box because of security issues, especially
sure.
at the moment. But we'd get you very close to or even better seats. It's not the best seats in the house, some of them.
Yeah.
I can get you a day after Wimbledon if you wanted to play a game on centre court.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Well, I'll take you up on that offer.
Are you a very rich Frenchman?
Not yet. I'm not French.
Well, then I'm not talking to you.
No, that's a very good point. So if you take us back to the start, to the very early days, why did you decide
to get into the concierge business, which is famously kind of congested and quite competitive.
Wasn't at the time.
But it is now. I can't move for another lifestyle. Like
imitation is the fifth and serious form of
flattery. Absolutely. And they're
probably
all
most of them have worked for me at some point or other. We're by far the largest brand in the world in this space. In fact, we're the only real brand in the world. We operate in 60 countries, employ 3,500 people. But we're not just a lifestyle concierge business anymore. We're known for that. But we have a brand consultancy business, which is equally as big. We have a travel business that dwarfs all of them. We have about 28 businesses in the group, from education through to gifting.
Wow.
So what got me into it was I was a Amex Black holder, and I used to use it when I was producing movies. I used to use it, and I was very disappointed with the service. So like that chap that bought that shaver, I can't remember, Remington or whatever. I loved the business so much that I did it myself.
What, you just thought you weren't getting good enough rewards for the amount of money, or just the
service? It was just the service. Delivery of the service was pretty poor. Remember, this was almost pre-internet. I mean, I know I sound historic, prehistoric there, but 1999, this was. So the internet allowed you a lot of leeway as it grew. I also invented Google at the time. I thought, someone will have to document and catalog the internet, but I forgot to do that. Good luck to the Google boys. I think they're doing okay.
They're doing fine. So how did you form that central team? It's you, Ben, and Paul. And why did you decide to bring those two other people in?
Well, actually what happened was Paul, I was at Oxford with, and he's quite bright. Mm. So he could do law. He could understand. He could read words. Okay. So he's a commercial director in the business. And Ben, I met in a hairdresser's. His cousin, Tom Parker Bowles, was my PR agent on my film.
Yeah.
And he said, you should meet Ben. So I met him in a hairdresser's, which was Piers Adams's place around the corner here. And we got on okay, and we came up with this daft idea to do an online shopping center. That was the original concept.
Wow.
But very exclusive for the luxury end of the market. But of course, luxury was the last thing that went online.
Yeah.
And so we gave up on that quite quickly and flicked it to accessing the inaccessible club for the people who live in mainly London and New York.
And it strikes me that the concierge business is a kind of chicken and egg scenario, that you need the contacts at first to convince the clients to sign on with you, but you can't really get the contacts, so you've got the clients bankrolling the operation. How did you make that work, that early cycle?
So in terms of, we were, let's put it this way, hustling, I think, at the beginning. Would I say blagging? I don't think so, but we were definitely hustling.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
A little bit.
Okay.
Remember, we're young. We're 25, and we're out in the town, and we were having a great time. I slept about 3 hours a week. We knew a lot of people, so we knew a lot of people on the club scene and in the restaurant scene, and we've grown up with them over the years.
Yeah.
So it's become less of a challenge, that bit.
Right.
And certainly none of us hit the tiles until 3 a.m. anymore.
Okay.
We have teams of people who do that for a living.
Yeah.
Ultimately our original membership base was around 250 people who we raised some money to start the business, but they ultimately got the business going.
Yeah.
And they were friends and family.
And what was that early package like? Was it just a one-tier membership fee?
It was. I can't even remember how much we charged. I think it was about £300, per year.
Wow,
it's nothing. And we're still honouring that, I think.
So people who signed on in 2000 who are still paying £300.
Yeah,
they were
our founder members. Yeah.
Founder members. Wow,
and they're a pretty active bunch.
Yeah, I bet they are. £300. They're going to make you do your work.
We upgrade them though.
Okay.
After a while, we sort of say, look, we love you as a founder, but you've had your money back. but we have three tiers. We really sell only two tiers now, which is dedicated, which is about £7,000.
Yeah.
Elites are up in the £25,000 to £30,000 a year.
Sure.
Yeah.
And how did you go about finding that early investment? Was that families and friends, or was that simply pitching to angel investors?
Well, there were a couple of people that supplied services to us. We did a sweat equity deal. There was a couple of guys that introduced us to some capital. It wasn't huge amounts.
Yeah.
It was only a couple of £100,000. And remember, the private equity industry at that time wasn't as sophisticated as it is now. Certainly weren't lots of VCs roaming around with checkbooks.
And, yeah.
And, you know, we basically blagged as much as we could and ran a very lean machine. You know, we didn't spend money. We just never did. That mentality has slightly changed today, okay. Which perturbs me every day of the week. You know, we got everything sponsored. We pulled in favors. Yeah. We did everything we could, yeah.
And did you have any idea that it would grow into a multinational company with sort of 60 offices around the world?
No.
Thousands of
people? No. If I had, I wouldn't have done it.
Why did you say that?
Well, because I think, you know, you have ambition for a business. This is a human-intense business.
Yeah.
Humans come with a lot of issues. And then we're dealing with humans.
Right.
That's great fun. I'm joking. I mean, it is a good business. It's a fun business. It's a lifestyle business in terms of true word of lifestyle. Not,
sure.
Not I'm running it for a lifestyle.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
go out.
But so. It must have afforded you quite a nice lifestyle along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Accidentally.
Yeah, yeah. 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 I mean, I remember, yeah, we'd be entertained by all sorts of people wanting to show their wares and their products.
Hmm.
But it never really interested me that much. No. It's really odd.
You'd rather be on the other end of the bargain, or between the two at least.
What do you mean?
As in, you don't want to be the guy on the yacht, you want to be the guy maybe sorting out the yacht.
Yeah, I always find people who sit on yachts, they tend to be quite bored.
Bored, not boring.
Not boring, no, okay. No, they seem to be all right. Nice, they sit and chat on the back of a boat.
Yeah.
I think they always worry about how much it's costing them.
Yeah.
I mean, like the day rate or the hourly rate of a mega yacht is... crazy, especially if it moves. So
yeah.
They tend to move. I mean, you know, boys with toys, it's always yeah. entertaining.
So I suppose your clients would all be described as high net worth or ultra high net worth or ultra, ultra high net worth. Do you think things are changing now? And London is a particularly odd place at the moment. It's kind of the best of times and the worst of times. There's a lot of wealth, but there's uncertainty with Brexit, elections, terrorism. Do you think a lot of people, a lot of high net worths might now pack up their bags and go to somewhere like California, a lot safer and calmer?
Well, I love California. But have you ever done business in California?
No.
There you go. So, you know, for me, look, culturally, as a superpower in city terms, a super city, there's nothing yeah. like London. I've lived in a few of the cities around the world, New York and Hong Kong, etc. There's no one touches London. I think Brexit is just, I mean, honestly, it's just getting so painfully boring. No one cares anymore. I mean, people do care, but they've sort of got to the point where no one actually really yeah. knows. You know, you wake up one day and, oh, all Europeans can stay. Oh, okay, well done. Why did you say that months ago? Yeah. You know, it's like, but, you know, terrorism, come on. You know, I know we all like to live in the fear that, you know, we're going to walk out and there's obviously lots of unfortunate incidents that are happening. But in reality, it's tiny, tiny numbers that are affected. And, you know, the city bounces very quickly. And I think it takes a real, really odd person to react to that sort of level of terrorism.
Yeah.
In a way to flee from the city.
Yeah.
I think London has too many attractions to hold people here for us to worry about it. And also London's very cheap, right? We're 20% off at the moment. Dollar to the euro.
Mm.
So we're seeing a lot of activity. I mean, real estate in London is very, very reasonable on an international scale. Even though it's expensive, it's wow. still, I know that's from a that's from a Brit to a Brit.
Yeah.
But if you're American, if you're from California and you want to buy here, it's relatively cheap, you're 20% off. So, but Cali has sunshine.
Yeah.
Marijuana's legal. And people do deals.
Yeah.
Never, as far as I can see. They take forever to do a deal. The thing about Cali, especially Los Angeles, is you have to be there quite a long time to get into ingrained in their network.
Right.
So, you know, even if you move there and learn about how they do their thing, you still have to spend quite a lot of time.
It has been a shift lately between spending money on things and spending money on experiences.
Yeah.
And are people going now towards, they want to be something as opposed to just own something?
Yeah. So
and if that's the case, how can you buy the things that money can't buy, so to speak?
Yeah, well, there's this whole resurgence in mindful entrepreneurism around going on trips that give back to the community in which you're visiting, or at least trying to get actively involved in. So it could be something like there's a ecological sort of research center built within an eco lodge in Costa Rica, and you will go there for 2 weeks and spend at least a week of your holiday or vacation to research with the researchers in situ a certain element of the biosphere that's you know, particular to that area, and that's happening a lot. So we've got a client building a very large yacht. We're talking about yachts, but actually it's a marine research vessel, and he's going to spend 2 weeks on it. It's super luxurious, his bit, and the rest of it, which is in effect a marine, it floats around the world doing marine research, because he just looked at it and said, well, look, I'm going to be using it 2 to 3, 4 weeks of the year. The rest of the time, it's got to have a purpose rather than just having a crew on it that just sits there and drinking his Moe or whatever it is. So that type of thing is growing up quite nicely. Yeah. And then there's experiential. So we're talking about putting together something in the near future, which is a totally, I don't think I'm giving away any trade secrets here, but you will be applying as a client, not necessarily of ours or anyone, but someone that wants to go on an experience that we've psychologically profiled you for.
Sure.
So we're going to take you to the edge of your limits. And that can happen at any time during a year.
Have you seen the film The Game by Michael Douglas?
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
So, and that's going to happen in real life?
Yeah.
Wow. The second I saw that when I was 16, I was like, I would love to set up a company.
So what we're doing is we've set that up with the chap who owns Crystal Bays, Tom. And what we're going to do is launch a application process where you will be panel interviewed.
Wow.
And then you will then be... several thousand people, I think, will apply for this. Well, they'll be dotted around. You'll see it suddenly coming into the press. And then we will have you psychologically profiled, and then we will give you a phone, and that phone will be activated at any time, day or night, and you have to do
what
it says.
In what period of time? The next year? The next 10
years? Within
the
next year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much does that kind of experience set you back?
So the experiences range from 1 to 10 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is it a pleasant experience on the whole at the end of it?
What we have to do is psychologically profile you. You sign away your life. We obviously won't damage you, but we will take you to the extremities of your resilience. Because what I find nowadays is that experientially, people want to be pushed. And very successful people want to find out where their breaking point is.
Incredible.
Mm. In Sri Lanka, we put a client through an experience where they were kidnapped at the airport and were flown by helicopter, blindfolded to a camp in the middle of the jungle, and then were ransomed to their family.
Wow. Do they have a safe word?
Probably.
The word is probably?
No. Sometimes.
Yeah, they must do.
But then they had to escape the camp.
Wow.
And we had put on their personal GPRS tracker, so we knew exactly where they were. But then they had to get through the jungle back to, and we put things along the way.
Yeah. So is that the direction you're going in, these more and more kind of outlandish experiences and these really high concept pieces?
This is something that we've only done recently, and this will come out to the market probably in the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
But experiential can take all forms. It doesn't have to be at this extreme level. There's a client of ours that rents an island every year with his family and has like a Disney on Ice experience or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's all about just elevating rather than the fly and flop mentality of, you know, et cetera.
And are you mindful of your part in this kind of high net worth lifestyle, which is very environmentally unfriendly with private jets crisscrossing the earth? And is that something that you take into account consensually?
Yeah, so it is environmentally unfriendly.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the most efficient use. But equally so, I think, you know, we do eco audits for people, when we can guide them to companies that can level their carbon emission footprint.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the time what we try to do is encourage people to think about how they can live their lives a little bit more environmentally friendly through not taking certain things in a certain direction.
Yeah.
But equally so, I feel, you know, we run a company that has an ecological policy, and, you know, I can't force you not to get on a private jet. I definitely think eco warriors out there that talk a good game but still take a private jet need to have a good look at themselves.
Yeah. I know that Quintessentially kind of incubates and advises a lot of entrepreneurs and startups. Yeah. What do you look for in an entrepreneur? Is there kind of a trait to a very good young entrepreneur that you see?
I think you have to be look, when you invest in a company, we have something called Q Ventures, Quintessentially Ventures, and we also have something called Offer, which is a platform for crowdfunding, aggregates all the crowdfunding models. You invest in people, you don't invest in an idea. Yeah. Probably every idea pretty well has been thought of. We're just tweaking around the edges and using words disrupting the market. The end of the day, it's the person that drives the business.
Yeah.
What you look for is someone who's intelligent, smart, not overthinking things, not trying to overanalyze things. You can hire people to analyze things for you, but goes with their gut and is flexible. And someone who listens to good advice, but also takes the route that they think's best for the business. And that's pretty tricky to find, but it does exist out there, obviously. And I would say that most people aren't entrepreneurs, but unfortunately everybody's a CEO entrepreneur at the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
And everybody's in a startup, whereas actually we still need lawyers and doctors and things, so think about it before you jump.
What mistake do you see these young entrepreneurs making more than any other?
They raise a lot of money and spend it.
On what? On office space? On parties?
No, I don't think there's necessarily parties. That's too obvious. But they think, wow, that was easy, and then just blow it. And you're not looking at the nuts and bolts. We raised best part of £200,000 when we started Q. And that was it. And from that, we grew to where we are. You really don't have to raise lots and lots of money until you've got proven it out. And then even then, you probably don't even have to raise the money if it's a good idea.
Yeah. So I've heard you speak a lot about a kind of super yacht project you're putting together.
Yeah.
Is that still in the works? What's the completion date for that?
So we go into the yards. Fingers crossed we get into the yard in November. And we're just finalising the yard at the moment. And it will take 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But it will be something that I think will be iconic on the water. And also it's wider. So most drafts are around 20, 25 metres, which will be at least 35 metres wide, so it'll feel a lot roomier. It'll have 100 berths on it,
Wow. 12
owner residences, and it will be exactly where it should be at all times. So it'll be very much a feature of world events.
You get a very, very wide yacht into the marina at Cannes, for example?
Why would we? Don't have to go into the marina.
Fine. You just moor it offshore with a launch.
It would be a boat that you'd want to get onto.
Okay.
And it'd be quite difficult to get onto it.
Presumably you could land a helicopter on it as well.
Yeah, there's two pads. Okay. One touch and go and one solid pad. Yeah.
So why, forgive me, if you've just said that yachts are so expensive and a very, very efficient way to lose money.
Yeah.
Are you going into the yacht business and building what I think is going to be the biggest yacht in the world? Is that right?
Yeah, it'll be the largest private yacht in the world. Because I don't want to buy my own one. Secondly, it's a floating private club. So there's a need for it. We know there's a demand. I certainly won't personally go on a cruise ship. I don't know many of my friends that would.
No, that's true.
So this is something that I think is going to hit a very niche target market, but in a very, very laser fashion.
Yeah.
And you can park your own yacht at the back of it. Has a fold-out harbour.
Wow.
It's going to be phenomenal. I'm really excited about it. I've seen the deck drawings and how it's going to look. It's going to be absolutely mind-blowing.
So with all these fingers in pies and all these clubs and yachts and syndication deals, you must be probably one of the best connected men in the world.
No, I know a lot of very well-connected people.
Right.
I'm the connected to the connected.
And do you think it's more important?
Does that make
business?
Me more connected than them?
I don't know.
That's a real conundrum, isn't it? Yeah. I think I have to think about that. Is it the chicken or the egg or the egg's the chicken? The chicken's egg. I don't know. Perhaps we'll work that one out.
We'll have to. And do you think it's more important to know people or to know things? Is it who you know more important than what you know?
Ah, that's a good question, isn't it? Well, I know very little about nothing. So so does that make me know everything about everything? See, we're coming again philosophical.
Yeah.
Takes me back to Oxford. Anyway, I think you have to know something. I mean, you know, you have to know something about something to make people know that you know something valuable to them to have. So for me, you can get so far on who you know, but really what you know is more important.
Really? So it strikes me that with all these members around the world, you must have an incredible amount of data and insight into very, very wealthy people and how they spend their money.
Yeah.
Is that, do you monetize that revenue stream? Is that another avenue you look down?
Yeah, so I think for me, the data business, the data hub that we run is probably one of the most valuable out there. We've had 17 years of tail data on you as a client. You've grown up with us. You've probably gone from your clubbing days into your marriage through, and we've probably put your wedding together, and then you get kids and their education, etc. So, you know, and long may that continue, that funnel continue to grow. So we have long tail data on you, but we don't sell it to anyone. We aggregate it. We tell brands how they should talk to you and how they should approach you if they were interested, but not you as an individual, you as a as a group of high net and ultra high net worths. And it's invaluable to them. I mean, that's your business as much as mine. Media and content is valuable to those people, and how they consume it and how they view it and how they use it is invaluable to luxury brands.
So I think we know a lot about Aaron Simpson, the businessman, but I'd like to know a little bit about Aaron Simpson, the man. So I'm going to ask you some kind of quick-fire questions, and if you can answer as honestly and brutally and quickly as possible.
Sounds like Tinder.
It is a bit like Tinder.
It feels a bit like Tinder. Does here, it? Actually. Yeah, well, I haven't been on a Tinder date. But,
have you not?
No, because I'm married.
Good to clarify
that. Well, it is very good to clarify.
And are
that
you going to swipe right or swipe left on this experience?
Well, I don't know what that means.
Okay, very well done.
Is that right? I put you up, I think. Or down.
Right, I think right. I haven't used it either. I'll clarify. I think right means accept, and so left
sounds
means
more
decline.
Yeah,
right does sound. Yeah.
Well, we are in a conservative government regime.
Yeah. Okay. So, who in the world of business do you most admire?
Tom Hunter.
Who's Tom Hunter's? Of Hunter Wellies?
No, he's not of Hunter Wellies. He's a Scottish entrepreneur. I think he's done an awful lot for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
He's backed a lot of businesses. He's the wealthiest guy in Scotland, for example. Sold his business, which was... he unfortunately brought Shell suits to Britain.
That's a hell of a claim.
That is a hell of a claim, but he made a big business out of it.
So Ali G, Sacha Baron Cohen's success is due to Tom Hunter.
Totally, I think,
for nothing else, we can thank him for that.
Absolutely.
And what would you be doing if you weren't doing this job?
Producing movies.
And do you still want to go back to that, do you think?
Blank check movie making.
Does that happen anymore?
Not in Britain. No. Britain doesn't really... I mean, I don't want to diss the British film business, but it's not really a business anymore. It's more of a cottage industry.
Yeah. What are you most proud of in your career so far?
I think it's the people around me, my colleagues, the friends I've made over the years. Look, I've had to fire some, which isn't easy, but hopefully they understand why.
Yeah. And what's been your biggest failure, do you think, so far in your career, if you can even think of one?
A failure? I've opened some businesses that failed. But I don't think that's big failure. That's just throwing the spaghetti against the wall, and if it sticks, it's ready. If it's not,
Try later.
Try again.
Yeah. Which book has influenced you the most in your life?
Oh, that's interesting.
Something from your Oxford days, your philosophy?
No, I think my favourite sort of influential book, Far From the Maddening Crowd, I quite like.
Okay. Wow. How would you like your Wikipedia entry to start?
Oh, I think it already starts something like, he is a genius in his own mind. I don't know, something like that. But it hasn't been edited yet.
Okay.
I think, tried to edit it to say genies.
Do you have a personal motto?
Is this pre or post coffee?
We'll do both. Pre-coffee.
Pre-coffee would definitely be something around the lines of be scared but do it anyway.
Wow.
And then post-coffee, do it anyway and regret it afterwards.
And has that been true of your own life? Have you been scared of the big moves you've made?
Yeah, I think you have a little bit of stage fright. Otherwise, if you don't perform well.
Right.
But I'm never really scared. I mean, ultimately, if you do it, then you're not that scared.
No.
Because you're putting your foot. I think it comes back to this experiential thing that we were talking about earlier, which is take yourself to the limits.
Sure.
And getting people to that limit is very exciting, I think.
And what's been your scariest then moment in your career?
Ooh, I think probably just when we had £80 left in the account and we were employing 400 people.
How did you make it through that?
I rang a few people very fast.
Yeah.
Who have done very well out of the deal I got that day.
Yeah.
I think desperation often, I mean, this is just after the September 11th stuff going on, and people were very, very, concerned about where the world was going.
Yeah.
And actually a couple of those people have come around full circle, and I've done it back to them in a nice way, lent them money or whatever. So.
And what's your, this is the last one then, what's your idea of happiness?
Look, I think, my idea of happiness, and it sounds a bit crass and corny, but if everybody around me is happy, I'm happy.
Brilliant. Aaron Simpson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for listening to this episode of the Gentleman's Journal podcast. We'll be back in a fortnight with more invaluable insights from the world of entrepreneurs. But until then, you can find us on our website, which is www.thegentlemansjournal.com. Or if you're so inclined, follow us on Instagram at The Gents Journal, or indeed on Twitter at The Gents Journal. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you very, very soon.